Two very good lessons today. Number one, never expect to get back from the zoo at within an hour. That's number one. And number two, don't go to a zoo on a Sunday. So those are two very important lessons to learn, and it's something that will help us for the rest of our lives. So what the subject of our shiur today is going to be about the idea of misora. Now, any doctor that you'll go to has had somebody that he either practiced under or has dealt with extensively or has learned under. In other words, they've all had some type of training that was not just in a classroom together with a teacher teaching them and something on the board, but more extensive training, hanging out with the doctor, seeing what the doctor does and seeing how he reacts to certain situations. That's why they have residencies. Residencies are not only for the people to get their hands-on training, but it's also to be around the elder doctors, the ones that have experience, the ones that really know what they're doing. It goes with journalism as well. Most journalists have somebody that they model themselves after, somebody that they've called, that they've talked to, and they feel that this is important because to do something on your own, although it might be more artistic and it could be more effective in some ways, but there's something that's just lacking. They're missing out on something, and that's what they're really worried about. What are they not getting that they would have gotten if there was somebody there together? Now, the way our system works and the way we've always gone from the beginning, from Moshe Rabbeinu on down, is that we haven't just had rabbis and students. It was never that way in that way throughout all of Israel. There's always been a special relationship between a teacher and their student, and both sides, from men and from women, in which something was taken from the teacher and passed on to the student. And that's unbelievably necessary, because if you're going to combine everything that God said into 301,805 letters, and that's it, you're not going to have any more, a little bit more than 67,000 words, and altogether about 8,000 psukim. If you're going to try to put all those things together and say, here's what God wants, and just put it right there, then clearly something's missing. You're not going to be getting everything just by reading the text and trying to figure out. In fact, all Sifrei Torah, every single Sifrei Torah that you'll see, not only has the regular letters in there, but there has to be a space in between every single letter. In fact, if a letter is attached, even if a tiny little part of the bet is attached to a little vav, and there's a little tiny ink line in between, the entire Sefer Torah is puzzle. You automatically throw out this, don't throw it out, but you clean up, fix the Sefer Torah and do it through. And the reason why is something simple. We're always reading in between the lines. There's always something that the text is trying to tell you that it's not expressing specifically through the text, it's trying to tell you in some other way. There's always something there that it's trying to help you with. And that's the idea behind what it means by learning Torah Sheba'al Peh. Not just the Shevech Sav, the one that's written down, the Torah that's written down, but something that's given over from one person to the other. Now, once you see that as a whole, that there's something to understanding the Torah and not just reading it through, then we have to understand, well, why can't just anyone just get up there and start reading their own lines and just understand it as, well, here's what I get from it. For example, I've only been approached three times by guys that are trying to understand why I don't believe in a certain guy by the name of Jay, but it's only been three times so far. But those three times, all I said was one simple pasuk. I said, there's a verse in Deuteronomy that says that when you come to your friend's field and you see grapes, take as many as your hands can hold, but don't put any away for later. How do you translate that verse? How do you understand that? And it's a simple question, because the verse is it's self-explanatory. It seems that you could just take as many as you want while you're walking through someone's field. But the way that our rabbis have taught us in the Gemara of Bava Metzia is that it doesn't mean that just anyone can walk anywhere and take whatever they want, but rather, the way it's supposed to work is that if you're working for someone else, and if you're working at the time, then while you're working, you're allowed to take fruits to eat. Since you have everything in front of you, you're allowed to eat something while you're working. That's what you're allowed to do. And that only applies by fields, only applies if you're picking. It doesn't apply if you're plowing, doesn't apply if you're planting, doesn't apply for anything else other than picking the fruits that are coming out. Now, if I would have looked at that, and everybody else that tells it to me, at that says, well, this is what it means, it clearly would mean something completely different. But there has to be something that we call a Mesora that leads down, that understands, that helps us understand why and how that's so. We're not going to be going through the process. There is a multifaceted process of trying to understand how to get those excerpts from the verses themselves and trying to take it out and understanding it. But that's not our process today. Our process today and what we're going to do is try to understand where this all stemmed from, where it all came from. And for that, you all have sheets in front of you. On these sheets, we're going to be going through from the beginning to the end. I'm going to have a total of 131 names on this sheet. 130, depends on which side, but 130 or 131 names altogether. It's going to take us all the way from Moshe Rabbeinu down to me. That's going to go all the way through there. And then on the very, very back, the third page, I have Hasidic courts. That goes a different way, but that might be time, that might be for something else entirely. We all know that Moshe Rabbeinu, came down in the year 2448, that is 1312 BCE, that he had come down from Har Sinai, Mount Sinai, he had come down with the Torah. His understanding of the Torah, what exactly he got, and what it was that he gave over to Bnei Yisrael is up for controversy. And that controversy we're going to try to explain as we get to a little bit further down to the year 1040. We'll try to explain where that came from. There's no question he came down with the Ten Commandments. There's no question he came down with chukim, which are the laws that nobody understands. For example, the red heifer is definitely there. Other ideas of the chagim, the moadim, the different holidays were definitely given at that point. And there's no question that there were certain other sheva mitzvahs b'nei Noach. The seven Noahide laws were definitely given at that time, in addition to the Ten Commandments and what came with them. What else was given seems to be that it was added on every single year. With a man like Moshe, who could constantly speak to God, things were added on. And that was the only time that we've ever had additions to what was given in Har Sinai, something that was accepted and put in. At the end of 40 years, at the 40th year of the desert, that's when Moshe Rabbeinu wrote down everything that God had told him. It was dictated to the point where he knew every word based on what God had told him. And if Moses hadn't proven himself for the past 40 years, we wouldn't believe a word he was saying. But the past 40 years led us to believe that this is what he got from God directly. And it was put down into, as I mentioned before, the 301,805 letters of our Torah today. Everything after the Torah is a completely different level. And this is something that, unfortunately, the other religions just don't get or don't understand. The Bible is, I understand there are 24 books, and it does go, and we have Joshua and the Judges and Samuel and Kings, and going on further and further, Ezekiel, Jeremiah, I love the English names, Isaiah, and then going through the Treyasser, which are the 12 prophets going all the way through, but they have absolutely no stature in comparison to the five books of Moses. The five books of Moses take the top, Bereishis, Shmos, Vayikra, Vayomer, Devarim. Everything is based on that, and then everything that's added on just tells us how to be a leader, how to act in front of other people, and how the world runs. That's all it is. But it's not to add on laws or to subtract laws from what Moses had written, only to explain the laws a little bit further. For example, Joshua, in three different places, explains laws that we were not positive about up until that point. For example, Bris Milah. Milah is not self-explanatory, and it is not explained thoroughly in the Torah. But it is explained with a concept called Priya in Joshua. It's explained over there. Arei Miklat, which are cities of refuge, which we haven't had for thousands of years, but the cities where people ran to if they killed someone accidentally, which I just, as a side note, does anyone know anyone that killed anyone accidentally? It's unbelievable.
Yeah, actually, I have.
So we have one. You're the first person in 10 years of teaching that I've heard anyone say that they know somebody. That's unbelievable. But it did happen.
Yeah.
We have one.
Was
unbelievable.
A doctor, you might.
A doctor. Well, actually, the Gemara says that a doctor might be, I'll put it differently, but it's Karov Lamezid, that it's not considered an accident. It's considered a different status, something else entirely. So that would be different. I'm sorry?
What about a car accident?
Car is also a bit of a question, whether it's considered more direct. So if the person ran in front of the car, that might be an accident. That would be considered an accident, so to speak. But shogeg is the real word for it. But there of itself, we don't have all the laws to that. Joshua explained them all. the ideas of what it means to fight a war, how to fight a war, what you're allowed and what you're not allowed to do, is not entirely explained in the Torah. It's explained by Joshua. Those types of laws were added on during that time. Most of our ideas of what prophets can and can't do are explained by the prophets themselves. We see what Eliyahu HaNavi did. We see what Elisha HaNavi did. We see what Micha, Yoel, Habakkuk, etc., what they were allowed and what they weren't allowed to do, and we take it from those books, and we add it. I shouldn't say it's an additional law, but it's an explanation of what happened during the times of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's a better explanation, going a little bit further. But Moshe Rabbeinu brought everything down and gave it over to his greatest student, Yoshua ben Nun. Yoshua ben Nun died in the year 1244 BCE. That's after they had conquered most of Israel. And now comes a very, very interesting note. These lines over here from 1 until 40 is written up by the Rambam, by Maimonides, in his list of where he gets his Mesorah from. That goes all the way from Moshe down, and he finishes the Gemara up until Rav Ashi at number 40 in the year 427. I believe I wrote down over there, what did I write down over there? 420. It really is 427. That's a mistake. There are a couple mistakes over here because unfortunately I was only able to give you the first draft, the rough draft on this. But this goes through according to the Rambam. The Rambam points out that Pinchas HaKohen, Pinchas the son of Elazar, the son of Aaron HaKohen, the protagonist of last week's Parsha, Pinchas ended up living a very long time. Very long time. Some say that he is the neshama of Eliyahu HaNavi himself. Others say that he just lived a long time. The Ibn Ezra, who normally is a rationalist, takes a rationalist approach to all Midrashim. Even he brings down that Pinchas lived for hundreds of years. How long exactly he lived, we don't know. We know he was present by the times of the judges, by Othniel ben Kenaz, Ehud ben Geira, and Shamgar ben Anas. If he was alive past Devorah HaNeviah, or a little bit further, we're not positive about. But he definitely was there at that time. Pinchas HaKohen, without a question, makes it through. According to the Rambam, he was the teacher of Eli HaKohen, who was the last of the judges. If you go through Othniel ben Kenaz, Ehud ben Geira, Shamgar ben Anas, Devorah HaNeviah, Gidon, Abimelech, Tola ben Pua, Yair HaGiladi, it goes all the way through Ivtsun, and then all the way, I'm not so far off, but Shmuel HaNavi, and then finally Eli HaKohen, I should say before Shmuel HaNavi, Eli HaKohen learned from Pinchas. If you don't want to go with the Pinchas route, you can add on a couple and put down Pinchas goes into Othniel ben Kenaz, who would go down to the Bnei Yavitz, who were sons of the Canaan. Chever HaKeni would be put up there. Chever HaKeni would go to Shimshon, and Shimshon would go to Eli. Either way, regardless, Eli HaKohen was without a question on the list, and he gives it down to his, the one who took over after him, Shmuel HaNavi. Shmuel HaNavi, the one who anointed all the kings, was well known to have lived with Eli HaKohen from the year 2, from when he was 2 years old and on, and went further to the point where we get to David HaMelech. Now, David HaMelech only learned by Shmuel HaNavi for at most a year to a year and a half. But during that time, they had discussed unbelievable amounts of things. For example, where the Beis HaMikdash was going to be. That was a discussion that was held already by Shaul HaMelech and Shmuel HaNavi. Shaul held one way, and Shmuel HaNavi held another way. And Shaul disagreed and was planning on building the Beis HaMikdash in a different area. Only when David HaMelech was anointed and put together with Shmuel HaNavi, did he decide that it was going to be Yerushalayim on Har HaMoriah, and that was a decision made by them. They had learned that together. There were other lessons learned together between Shmuel and David, but they had discussed many different things together. David HaMelech was the Rebbe of Achya HaShiloni, which, if you wanted to skip a few generations, the Baal Shem Tov was said to have learned by Achya HaShiloni through dreams for many, many, many years. Baal Shem Tov did have his own physical Rebbeim, but he claimed to have had visions of Achya HaShiloni for years. So that takes us from 800 BCE down to the 1700s with the Baal Shem Tov. But regardless, Achya HaShiloni is the Rebbe of Eliyahu HaNavi. Eliyahu HaNavi taught Elisha HaNavi, and what should have come after Elisha HaNavi was supposed to be a man by the name of Gehazi. Unfortunately, Gehazi did some terrible things. he was taken down from his position, and instead Yoyada HaKohen, who was one of the Kohanim Gidolim, he took over, and he passed away in 695 before the Common Era. Now the Rambam says we go through many of the Treyaser: Zechariah, Hosea, Amos, Yeshaya, Micha, Yoel, Nahum, Habakkuk, Tzfanya, and Yirmiah had taught each other. Some of them may have died before the others, but their Rebbeim, their teachers, they still may have been a teacher of someone that was older than them. That still happened even back then. And each one going all the way through until we get to Yirmiyahu, which obviously takes us to the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. Once the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash happened, once that first temple was gone, we now bring us to the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. Anshei Knesset HaGedolah were those who were in charge at the time of the Gullus. Tremendous people were alive at the time. Hananya, Mishael, Azariah, Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi, Daniel was alive, Ezra HaSofer, Shimon HaTzadik, Nehemiah, Yoshua ben Yotzadik, the Kohen Gadol, aside from a guy that we might know of by the name of Mordechai, who was also there at the time. He was also known as at the time, but it's funny because he was only in Shushan. Everybody else was traveling to Eretz Yisrael or going back and forth and etc. Well, he, Mordechai, was this man who was living in Shushan, who had happened to be Ahasuerus, moved his palace too, so that Mordechai would be involved in the Purim story. But everybody else was still alive at the time, they're just not mentioned anywhere. The only one who has anything to do with the Purim story is Daniel, who's known as Hasach in the Megillah itself. Aside from that, no one else is there, but they're all there. But the idea is Yirmiah's famous student was Baruch ben Neria, who also helped him out of the pit. If anybody's been in Ir David, outside the old city, you see that lime pit that's right around there. I don't know if they still take people down there. It was about 6-7 years ago when I last went. But there's a lime pit right there. Around those types of lime pits, that's where Yirmiah was thrown in. And Yirmiah was saved by Baruch ben Neria. Baruch ben Neria was the Rebbe and the teacher, and as well as everything that you can get, for Ezra HaSofer, who eventually came back to Eretz Yisrael. Ezra HaSofer gave over to Shimon HaTzadik, who after Ezra was the Kohen Gadol. Shimon HaTzadik was the Kohen Gadol in the Beis HaMikdash. He was the third, possibly second, Kohen Gadol to have lived during the Second Temple, to have served, I should say, in the Second Temple. That's Shimon HaTzadik. And finally, we bring us down to the beginning of the Tannaic period. Antigonus Ish Socho, who's mentioned in Pirkei Avos, in the very first parak. Antigonus Ish Socho, who passed away in 305 before the Common Era. That's who took it over from Shimon HaTzadik. Some say that they were together. Shimon HaTzadik and Antigonus Ish Socho were together, and they both learned from both from Ezra HaSofer. The Zugos, the twin, the pairs, where one of them was a Nasi, a head of Klal Yisrael, the other one was an Av Beis Din, the head of the Beis Din of Klal Yisrael. Both of them worked in yeshivas, and they led the yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael at the time, were Yossi ben Yoazer and Yossi or Yosef ben Yochanan. Yoshua ben Prachia, whose student, was one person who we know of as Yeshu, whether that's the actual Jesus or not is up for debate. It definitely was not at the right time according to their sources, but Yoshua ben Prachia and Nitai Hoar Bailey gave it over to Yehuda ben Taboy and Shimon ben Shattach. Shimon ben Shattach was the brother-in-law of Yanai the king, the Hashmonai king, who was a terrible king for Klal Yisrael in the times of the Second Temple. Shmai and Avtalion, who were both Gerim, both of them came from Titus from years earlier. Their grandfathers had converted. Some say Shmai and Avtalion themselves converted. And then came the famous Hillel and Shammai. And right there, you have the famous split. Machlokes, arguments, became rampant in Bnei Yisrael. And here's the reason why. This was a terrible time for the Jews. Terrible time because the Romans and Greeks were already highly involved and had lent their chachma, mostly the Greeks. The Romans didn't really have anything that they didn't steal from other nations. But the Greeks had lent their wisdom over to the people of Israel. And they took it in and they were enthralled by it. The Jews were always a learned nation. They were always a nation that got involved in anything that they possibly could. And when they saw this Greek wisdom, you'll see throughout the Gemaras where they'll say, you have to be very careful with Greek wisdom because of what it does to you. Because people were so enthralled with it, they'd be holding Gemaras open in front of them with little Greek sheets on the inside. Said it would look like they were learning while studying other things at the exact same time. See, now we have cell phones, so it's different. But back then, what do? You have like these little things, and they would read them inside. Hillel and Shammai, that was one thing that happened. Aside from the fact that many, many of the beginnings of the end of the pagan period, beginning of I don't want to say monotheistic, but really the ideas of the Trinity became very popular at around this time, although this was not the Council of Nicaea, and Jesus had not become popular just yet, but there were certain things that had become known during that time, during the times of Hillel and Shammai. And aside from that, the Hillel and Shammai were very different from one another. Originally, there was a man by the name of Menachem who worked together with Hillel, and everything was good, and there were no arguments. Shammai came in, and Shammai, the way you really have to look at them is love and fear. Shammai taught his students with a measure of fear. With a measure of fear. Throughout all the Gemaras, you see Shammai taking an amas abinyan, which means a big wooden stake, and wanting to, if anybody goes against me, they're going to be hit with this stake. When Hillel wanted to argue with Shammai, and he was the minority at the time, Shammai closed the door, put a sword by it, and said, anybody who walks through that door is going to be pierced by the sword. Shammai's way of learning was very direct and very, very strict. While Hillel was a person who loved his students, who treated everybody with tremendous amounts of love and respect. And one of the reasons why we end up going with the opinions of Hillel over Shammai is for that reason, that Hillel would mention everyone together. When he said an opinion, he not only said his own, he said over his adversary's opinion as well. Anybody who was against him, he said, and this is what Shammai says, this is what I say. And it's a famous Gemara in Erevin on Daf Yud Gimel that mentions that's one of the reasons why we have Hillel. Hillel had 80 students. One of them being the famous Jonas ben Uziel, and the lowest of them, the youngest of them, and the one who was not as privileged as the other, was the famous Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai was around at the destruction of the Second Temple. He is the one who made a deal with Vespasian to keep Yavne and the wise men, as well as Rabbi Tzadok. He's the one who arranged for the destruction to not be as bad as it could have been. He kept the lineage of David, of David HaMelech as well. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai took it from Hillel and brought it over, and now we have an unbelievable list. Rabbi Yoshua, who's mentioned quite a few places in Tanakh, and the Gemaras, I'm sorry. Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, as well as, I should say, the other students. There were five famous students of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai: Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkanis, Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch, Rabbi Yossi HaKohen, and Rabbi Shimon ben Nisanel, were the five famous students all mentioned in Pirkei Avos that had learned under Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Akiva learned from every single one of them. His main teacher was Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, but Rabbi Eliezer was also highly involved. Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkanis was highly involved in the teaching of Rabbi Akiva, which is why Rabbi Akiva really mastered not only the world of Beis Hillel, but even the world of Beis Shammai. At the same time, if you want, you can go through the Davidic lineage, in which Rabbi Gamliel was the son of Hillel. Rabbi Gamliel's son was Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel's son was Rabbi Gamliel the second. Rabbi Gamliel's son, the second, was Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel II. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel II's son was Hillel. And I'm sorry, Hillel, Yehuda, who is Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. So if you want to go that way, you can as well. I put in Rabbi Meir, who was one of the famous five or six Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva after the 24,000 were lost. That includes Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, different Rabbi Yossi, this is Rabbi Yossi, but Rabbi Chalafta, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, Rabbi Elazar, this is Rabbi Elazar ben Padis, and then the sixth one was Rabbi Nechemia, which leads us down to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, possibly, or you could even go straight to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, Rabbi. To bring it down to over there, they were both students of Rabbi Meir. And then you get to the Amoraic period. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was the one who compiled the Mishnayos. He did not write the Mishnayos. They were mostly written up until his time. But he compiled it and put it into the orders that we have today, the six orders with all of the Mishnayos that come together. The Amoraim that learned under Rebbe were Rav, Shmuel, and Rebbe Yochanan. Rav, Shmuel, and Rebbe Yochanan. Rav and Shmuel moved from Eretz Yisrael to Babel. Shmuel went to Nardah. Rav went to Surah. Rebbe Yochanan stayed in Eretz Yisrael, and his students put together the Yerushalmi Talmud, meaning the Jerusalemite Talmud, the one that not as many people do as the Talmud Bavli, Rav and Shmuel had started the ideas of the Bavli Talmud. And now we have the ideas of where the different yeshivas were. At first, Sura and Arda were the main centers of Torah. Eventually, people moved over to Pumbedisa. There was Rav Huna, number 37, Rabba, number 38, Rava, who lived by Rabba for quite a while, and then not on the list because the Rambam doesn't mention him, but he is on there, is Rav Papa. Rav Papa was ruler for almost 40 years. He was a Rosh Yeshiva and moved the yeshivas to Pumbedisa. That's where he was. And Rav Ashi is our 40th on the list. That brings it down to over there in 427. That was the end of the Amorayim. But the Gemara had not yet been sealed. The Savorayim was the next period of about 100 years altogether in which they sealed the Talmud together, sealed the Talmud and said that nobody can add on to it. And even what they did is they added on little pieces here and there to make it more understandable, but they wouldn't add on halachic disputes. They would not add on one of their disputes. They would not put that into the Talmud themselves. The little that we know of the Savorayim and the Gaonic period is due to the fact that not too many people wrote books at that time. There are letters that we have, but all that we have, and really almost everything that we have, comes from Rav Shrira Gaon, who is number 92 on this list. Rav Shrira Gaon has a famous letter in which he lists everything that happens from the beginning to the end of the Gaonic period, going through all the rabbis of Pumbedisa, which is why I wrote over here, we don't have a connection of rabbi to student over here, but we do have every Rosh Yeshiva that goes all the way through. Rav Shrira Gaon did not write down who the Rebbeim were and who the Talmidim were, but these rabbis of Pumbedisa, unlike Sura and unlike Narda, which were both closed down for a time, were all connected to each other. Many of them were children from their fathers, learning from the fathers and taking over afterward. That's the next period that takes us through the Savorayim and the Gaonim. No matter how you look at it, Rav Shrira Gaon was the father, number 92, of Rav Hai Gaon, number 93. Rav Shrira Gaon, without a question, taught his son Rav Hai Gaon. How you get from Rav Hai Gaon is a big problem now. Babylonia, which is where they were, and Pumbedisa was slowly but surely petering out. The people that were in charge in the historically, were unfortunately terrible for the Jews. They're parts of the Chaverim that are mentioned in the Gemara, the parts that ended up taking over. And unfortunately, it had finally come that some of the people in Babylonia were being forced to either convert to Islam, convert to even Christianity from the Eastern Romans, the Romans that had come over, or anything else they could possibly do. Many people left, which leads us to somebody who's not on the list, Rabbi Yehuda Leontin. Now, there were always people that were living in Italy, in Germany, France, in that area, in Tunisia and Morocco, and those who had moved to Eretz Yisrael, those who had moved to Israel themselves. But the level of learning in each one of those places was not on a very high level. Pumbedisa had all the Talmidei Chachamim. At some point, and we're not sure exactly when, the way that it's written is not exactly how it can work out historically, but there were four huge rabbis who were on their way from Italy, Italy had always had a connection with Babel from Pumbedisa, who were captured on a pirate boat. These are not Somalians. These were Arab pirates who took whoever they could find and sold them to different communities and found four huge rabbis and distributed them in different places. One of the big rabbis that was there was a man by the name of Rav Hushiel. Rav Hushiel, who lived and died at the year 1000, was sold to the Turkish community and eventually became the father of Rabbeinu Hananel. Rabbeinu Hananel, who's one of the commentaries in the Gemara, is one of the huge, I guess you could say, links down to the Rambam. That's one way to get down to the Rambam. But we're Ashkenazic. Ashkenazic, we get all of our Torah from Rashi, which is based on Rabbeinu Gershom. And Rabbeinu Gershom got all of his learning from a man by the name of Rabbi Yehuda Leontin. Rabbi Yehuda Leontin was not on that boat. Rabbi Yehuda Leontin learned under those four Talmidei Chachamim in Italy and then moved to France, Germany. Which brings us down to Rabbeinu Gershom, the Ben Yakar, Rashi, the Rashbam, the Rabbeinu Tam, which brings us all the way down through France to the Baalei Tosfos. If you turn the page, You can look through number 100 is the Rokeach, the Or Zeruah, the Marami Rutenberg, the Sharidura, the Aguda. All the way down brings us to the Ramah, number 113, Reb Moshe Isserles, who was from 1530 to 1572. He is one of the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, on our codified law. In fact, he wrote his own Shulchan Aruch, but when he saw the Reb Yosef Cairo in the Sephardic lands wrote his, all he did was add on additions to it. My one mistake that I had written down in this sheet, which I did not mean to, is number 114, is not the Pnei Yoshua. This is the Sma. That's the only mistake that I have on this page over here. The Sma should be over here. Brings down to the Magen Avraham, number 117, which eventually brings down to number 122, the Vilna Gaon, Rabbi Eliyahu Kramer. Anybody who brings themselves to the Vilna Gaon through their rabbis, through their teachers, can get themselves back to Har Sinai through this list. Now, how do you get from the Vilna Gaon to where we are today? Reb Chaim Volozhiner was the famous student of the Vilna Gaon, number 123. Then came Reb Yitzchak Volozhiner, Reb Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, the first of the Soloveitchik dynasty, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, Reb Baruch Ber Leibowitz, his student, Reb Aaron Chaim Zimmerman, my Rebbe, Rabbi Daniel Lehrfield, the Binas Daniel, and finally myself. So all together, if one goes through, all the way through, you can get down to where I am. Now, there is a gap over here. My number 130 over here is because my Rebbe is much, much older than me. And I'll tell you, the way that I learned by him is something very different. I didn't just learn Talmud by him, although I was by his shir for 2 years, and I learned his methodology and how he understands the text and everything. I hung out by him. Whenever I could go there for Shabbos, I stayed there for Shabbos. Whenever I could see what he did in certain situations, I watched him. And the way he told me is he did the exact same thing by his Rebbe, Reb Chaim Zimmerman, who was once the Rosh Yeshiva here in Skokie Yeshiva. Rabbi Lehrfield is from Chicago originally. In fact, his brother was the rabbi, I should say, at the Rabbi Lehrfield at Lincolnwood Jewish Congregation. His father was the old rabbi there. He's the reason why my father is from today, Rabbi Lehrfield's father. So it's funny, I have no relation to Reb Chaim Zimmerman whatsoever. We share the last name, and it's an awesome last name. But aside from that, I have no other connection to him. But I spent a lot of time understanding the way my Rebbe thinks, the way he understands things, the way he goes through things. And I can still tell you today that I use it all the time with my own students. I can answer them questions based on how I know my Rebbe would have answered that question. So even though I don't have every single thing that he has, and I don't have every little bit that he knew about every Gemara, I didn't learn every Gemara under him, I understand how he goes through not only the way he learns, but the way he goes through life, and the way he understands things in life, and the same way that I know that he understood it from his Rebbe, Reb Chaim Zimmerman, the way Reb Chaim Zimmerman learned it from his Rebbe, Reb Baruch Ber Leibowitz. And I also have a different list over here, the Musser idea, in which my Rebbe is Rabbi Zev Kohn of Adas Yesharan, number 129 over there. Rabbi Zev Kohn learned under Reb Nosson Vachtvogel of Lakewood, who learned from Yeruchel Novavitz of the Mir, who learned from Simcha Zissel of Kelm, who learned from Rabbi Yisrael Lipkin, the famous Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who learned from Reb Zundel Salant, who brings back to Reb Chaim Volozhiner. So I can get myself another way back on this list. Depending on who your rabbi would be or who you have learned under, you should be able to get yourself back. And it's a beautiful thing to be able to attribute it. And I still remember there was a person who was having a terrible, terrible time. And the person could not understand for the life of him why you had to do this and that and you couldn't do things on your own and couldn't understand things on your own. And I pulled out this list to him and I showed him. I said, here's the reason why. Because we don't do things on our own. We do things through a mesorah of understanding the way that it was brought back from Moshe. And if you understand it that way, that's there. He took one look at this, and he looked at all the numbers. I have much more over here. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to give you the Sephardic. It's my fault. I will blame myself, and I'll blame the zoo. But I can't go through the Sephardic, the Rambam's line, or Spanish line that would have gone through the Rashba and the Ramban and Rabbi Yosef Albo and the Rashbash, or the one through Italy that goes all the way through, or the one that goes through Morocco and Tunisia to bring you down to the Baba Sali or Rav Ovadia Yosef. There are many other lines that go through all the way through. This Ashkenazic list, which goes from me straight back, should be able to prove it's only 130 generations. It's not like it's a huge amount. It's 130 generations to bring yourself back to Moshe Rabbeinu and say, we received the Torah at Har Sinai. It's a tremendous amount. And if anybody has any questions, I'm going to end now. But if you have any questions, then please ask me afterward.